Sacramento.
Glory, glory, Sacramento. Glory, glory, Sacramento. The Republic marches on.
Roro with the goal.
Roro's going to take a shot. Oh, my, do you believe it?
Cameron Nwassa charging forward, looking for a team to strike on distance, and it rattles in! Cameron Nwassa, the Sacramento kid!
That it was less about if and more about when Sacramento was going to join Major League Soccer. Well, folks, when is today? Your when has arrived.
Hello, Sacramento, and welcome to the Rise of the Republic podcast. I'm your host, Blake Marquez, joined, as always, by Richard Ivanowski. Good game, Rich. Great game. How are you feeling about it?
Honestly, so this is going to be kind of a tough look, but honestly, I thought it was a terrible game until, like, the 87th minute. I thought this was a stinker. I really did not enjoy watching the first 86 minutes of this game. But, yeah, obviously – a classic final 10 minutes, really kind of semi-historic, I'd probably say, bordering on that.
I want to get into that because I definitely have thoughts on the future nostalgia that this game may have. But overall, I wanted to ask you this. As far as excitement in a soccer match for about 10 minutes – you know, was this probably the most exciting 10 minutes of a soccer match you've seen, or what do you think?
No. I don't think so. This game really lulled me to sleep. I don't want to bury the lead, so I think we got to get out there that Juju Chavez and Mario Penagos both scored. They're both 18 years old or under. I'm actually not sure when their birthdays are, but they – Penagos is on a pro contract, which he signed in January, along with Hayden Sargis, the first guys, not first ever, but the first guys to go to a pro contract for this league year from the academy. And Juju Julian Chavez is still an academy, pure academy player. So that's the headline. Two kids came in, subbed on late, and scored two goals that got the win for Sac Republic. But, yeah, just to get back to your question, this game I thought was really, 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 really rough for the first 80-something minutes.
What about when goals started getting scored? How were you feeling then?
I don't know. I think I got put to sleep by it. It wasn't that exciting to me by the time that it finally happened. I was happy for them. I was happy for the kids. I don't know what it means for the team this year. I don't think my hot take here is going to be that it doesn't mean as much good as maybe others think. I put out there on Twitter, actually on our Twitter at Rise Republic Pod, our most engaged with and most liked tweet ever by a very large margin. I basically said that this is great for the kids and all, but I think it really speaks poorly on the team's veterans, because there was more chemistry between these two kids than there was between the entire 11 for the first 80 minutes of the game.
I think the chemistry was obvious. It was obvious once those guys stepped on the pitch. They were linking up, like, amazingly. Do you think this was more of a case in the cases of Penagos and Chavez? Do you think that this was a case of fresh feet or bright talent?
I hate to say it, but I do think that it's not to say that they're not talented, because they are, and I think that they can be talented players for this team in future years. But in this particular game, I think this is kind of like a rope-a-dope. Like, the first team lulled this defense and this goalkeeper into a false sense of security by being so bad and so unable to finish and so uncreative and so uninteresting, didn't get a shot on goal, that when like two kids came on that don't know their own strength, don't know their own ability, don't have any fear, they don't have any hesitancy because they want their chance. They're excited to be out there. They do have the fresh legs. They're like how they say baby rattlesnakes are more poisonous because they don't know when to stop, how much poison to like emit from their glands when they bite you. They basically give you everything they got in that first bite.
Yeah.
That's kind of what these kids are like. They could have been stopped by a good defense, but the defense just was asleep and they got their one strike on goal and it was vicious and venomous.
I want to give you the sickest analogy award for that one. That was a great analogy. I like the rattlesnake analogy. I completely agree. I think they were definitely like, I feel like you're saying that they were doing stuff that maybe they shouldn't have been doing, that maybe a more grizzled vet may have been like, oh, I don't want to be too tricky. This is a close game. And they decided to just go out there and play, you know, street soccer almost, just dance around and move around and try to get into the space. They were definitely doing stuff where I think Juju made a run to save one right off the line to keep it in bounds. And I think he used his head, like sprinted, used his head, bumped it towards goal and created like a nice little, you know, opportunity in the attack by keeping the ball in. And that's when I wrote down like, oh yeah, for sure. Like that's fresh legs. You know, yeah. You're not doing that after you're playing 70 minutes.
Definitely. Definitely. And like the contrast between them and the Republic players that had been on for 90 minutes was really stark. Did you notice like with Juju, he took a corner or two and he had a couple crosses where he didn't seem to be getting any lift on the ball. Like it felt like he took a corner and it like really kind of like slowly rolled into the box. Did you notice that at all?
I did. And that's on my notes as well. I'm like, and that's another example on why it seems like the consensus, I feel like anyone could come to this consensus that a lot of that performance was fresh legs, but also it seemed like maybe the skill might not 100% be there when it comes to the technique of, you know, that kind of, because yes, to answer your question, yes, it seemed like he was mishitting balls that were meant to be lifted into the box.
Absolutely.
Supposed to rolled on the ground, and it was kind of a weird thing, especially knowing what we know now, where because you see this performance, you see he's doing good, he's clearly getting a lot of time on the ball, he's clearly linking with Mario, but then you see that and you're like, wait, what? You almost think maybe that was on purpose because he's been performing so well. You go back and watch it and you're like, no, the ball wasn't doing what he wanted it to.
It wasn't. And I think even the goal for Panagos in particular, those weren't like complex passes. They were on the ground, short passes. They were just playing triangles. They were doing like, you know, basically what you can do on FIFA with like a bad team. If you want to, you're not like sending crazy balls in. You're just like, all right, send your short passes here. Quick, play the angles. And then even the shot like wasn't super authoritative, but he just put the right angle on it, got the goalkeeper going the wrong direction. And it's not like super high skill level stuff, but it like spoke to a player that believed that, hey, you know what? I'm going to make a difference in this game. And they weren't concerned about their skill level, but they just had belief in themselves.
Yeah, and I think the way they were passing almost showed like a laziness about the Portland defense that was like they were quite literally getting passed around.
And it's a bad defense.
It's terrible. And you know, you're when you're passing around like that, overall you're waiting for the chance. Like, you know who's probably going to cut into the box, who's going to get that breakaway. You're just waiting for the ball. and the timing and the space to be perfect, especially when you're just given, you know, you're just going around that circle or that triangle to be exact 3, 4, 5 times. And then hopefully on the 6th, that'll give you your run. And it was perfect. Credit to Mario for staying on his feet. I really want to point that out. Did you think that was a foul? I mean, it obviously doesn't matter, but how would you have called that?
That I don't know for sure. I probably should have looked at the highlights again, so I'm not quite remembering that moment.
That's okay. I don't necessarily – it would have been a soft foul, especially, you know, good on the ref for not blowing the whistle and letting the boys play. But it was – he just kind of got a clip on him. You can see in some of the angles he's definitely, like, lifting his leg over to avoid the contact. And he stays on his feet, still drives the ball, finishes it. It's good on him for staying on his feet for sure. I think it was once he gets the ball, makes those runs, it's great. Class A for sure.
One more question on them. Do they seem, now that you know this team better and you know the ages of these guys better, do you think just from the eye test that you can tell that they're 18?
Well, that's a tough question.
Like maybe physical size?
You're saying in physical size?
Yeah, I'm just thinking like they look.
Oh, I thought you meant like with like soccer wise.
They look smaller to me than like they. I mean, they look like they are not fully full. I mean, you know, just they're 18. I mean, they're not fully grown, but like they for felt sure, to me like smaller.
They. So if you're asking if they have the same effect that Sarges does, where you almost don't notice him if you don't know what he looks like. No, I think they look young for sure. They look small out there, and you know, like not in the sense of like Roro. Like Roro's a shorter dude, but he's still got like a man's body. You know, they still got that. They look like kids.
Yeah, they. I think that's where I'm at. Like Roro is a slight guy, but he's built powerfully and his body control is at a really high level, where like I think that they're still growing and still going to – I mean, there's a lot of room for improvement, so it's a good thing.
For sure.
And, yeah, and I mean, Sarges is the same age, but I think is – you know, and when I talked to Mario after practice the other day, you know, he just said that Hayden has always been like just a really big kid for his age, like going back to when they were playing together at like, you know, 12, 13, 14 years old.
Yeah, that's so interesting. So has Juju been a part of the academy for as long as them? Because they're first class, they were the first class of the academy, correct?
Yeah, Hayden and Mario were in the initial, like when the academy was established, they were part of
the introductory. Yeah, that makes sense.
Yeah. And Juju was not, I don't believe. I'll double check that, but I don't think so. I think he came over from a different youth club. Yeah, but Juju, I'll say, just from being around the team in practice, a little bit of a look in here to practice. I'll just say that, like, the academy kids kind of stick together. Mm-hmm. I think I mentioned this to you off mic before, but they really do hang together. And I don't want to be harsh when I say there's a kids table vibe, but there is kind of, you know, and so going down to Rafa, who's 15 years old, they're the 15 year olds and the 16 year olds, 17 year olds, 18 year olds, they all kind of hang together. And they're treated like academy kids. They're treated like the younger kids on any team. And this is true with, you see it in the NBA, you see it in the NFL, you know, rookies and those types of players, they're kind of, you know, not picked on, but they're expected to, you know, kind of clean up after the team, go get the, you know, go roll the goal off the field, go pick up the water bottles and the equipment on the field. They're kind of treated in that way. So I think there is some separation between those guys and the, you know, 26, 27, 28, 29, 30 year olds that are in the first team. And quite frankly, like, I'm really impressed that they went on and outplayed them pretty handily. And I think I think it poorly reflects on the first team, but that's my hot take, and it is what it is.
No, I'm not going to say it's a negative reflection or a poor reflection, but I'm more neutral to it. I'm taking it more as like a good for the kids more than a like, darn, the first team isn't as good, or, you know, not isn't as good. I know that's not what you're saying, but darn, the first team couldn't do that, you know?
Yeah, they're obviously better. They just, I don't think that they have the chemistry or the, yeah, I don't know what the word is exactly, but I don't think they have the belief in themselves. It's execution.
Well, and I think it could be both, because we've kind of talked about this a lot in later in more recent episodes, is like the lack of ability to finish and what feels to be a lack of chemistry. You know, you can't really – you can back up lacking and finishing with stats. I don't think there's a way to back up chemistry with stats per se. You know, it's not nailed down, but it just feels like it's not there as much. It was obvious with the kids, but that goes to speak to the, you know, the metaphorical kids table that you're talking about.
Yeah.
One thing I do want to add, because I feel like we're going to shift into something, and before we do, I want to add someone who doesn't sit at the kids table but did have what I consider a pretty crucial hand in at least one of these goals, who didn't look like he was tired, was Drew Skundrich. He was a part of that triangle that we were talking of. He was just, you know, he was looked like he had fresh feet through this entire game. He's been known to, you know, box to box. He just, I think, a great performance from him and a key performance in that moment leading up to those goals.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that he is – I've talked about him before as – potentially the thing that's keeping this team together right now. I don't want to be so – listen, like, they've won 5 games in a row. I think that they're going to make the playoffs almost certainly. I don't want to be too harsh on them, but I also think that this might be the time to do it because they're winning so well that I think it's okay to criticize a little bit. I don't want to be too harsh. They deserve some praise that, you know, 15 points in 5 games. It's fantastic. Can't do better than that. But I wonder, because Skundrich is – he's always engaged. He's always fired up. He's always giving 100% effort. If they didn't have him doing that, I wonder if the accountability would be there, if the energy would be there. I could see this game, like, really – a lot of games really kind of just slowly fading out. But he's keeping them in it.
And I'm starting to notice, like, he's not always the distributor, or the finisher, or, like, I mean, he is oftentimes a guy that'll break up play, but he seems to have, like, a second man, second act kind of feel in a lot of these highlight, like, moments. Where he may not be the guy that sends the assist, but he'll send the second assist. You know, he may have been the guy that does break up that play that gets brought over to Roro, and then Roro will send, you know what I'm saying? Send the assist there. He's just always helping out. He's always there when the important stuff happens.
Yeah, definitely. Throughout the season, it's become really clear to me why he's the captain and why he deserves that honor. So, yeah, don't want to levy any criticism at him. I want to go through this starting lineup because there were some changes after some consistency throughout the past 2 or 3 matches. There were some changes, but I kind of want to go through the lineup one by one, even to touch on guys that weren't changed, because I think there's some news to be discussed. And I want to start in the very back in goal with Rafa Diaz. So he started again and put in a pretty good performance, you know, a really solid performance with one weak moment. There's also a really strong moment where he came out of the box and broke up a breakaway with his shoulder, which was crazy.
Can we talk about that real quick?
Yeah, tell me. What did you think about that moment?
So I don't have like an analytical breakdown, and I'm not going to praise any technique, but how can I word this? Did the analysis from the commentator make you, did that feel really forced to you?
He was out of control, I think, in the moment.
The lady made it seem like that was all according to plan.
Like he had tried to do that.
She was like, wow, that's a really hard thing to pull off. Great control by him. I mean, I'm definitely ad-libbing here, but no, he did not know what was going to happen next as far as what his body was physically going to do.
That could have gone really poorly. It was lucky, but like you also, I don't know. I mean, it was going to go badly, like pretty much in any situation. Like if we didn't get lucky there, it was going to go badly. So he found a way to deal with it. Wasn't the prettiest way to deal with it, but he found a way to deal with it.
It was a very odd moment, but I'm glad, you know, I consider it a good sign that he's like willing to come out and like handle these situations if he really has to. But all that, like that shoulder thing, the arms, I think he like put his arms out of instinct of being a goalkeeper, realized, oh, I can't do it here. And then realized, oh, it's going to hit my hands, which I don't think in that case, because the angle of the ball and what, it's kind of a toss up on if a ref calls that or not. But he did have that instinct to turn his shoulder to it. So he figured it out for sure.
Yeah. The news I want to get to about the goalkeeper position isn't about Rafa. It's about the signing of Brady Scott.
Yeah.
A transfer on loan from FC, from Nashville, SC, excuse me. He's from Petaluma, close by here, not too far away. He started in the national team, USA under 20 team that won the gold, I believe. Yep, the CONCACAF under 20 gold. So that's a big deal. That's a big deal. We're talking about, we've been hearing a little bit of rumbling about Hayden Sarr just getting some love potentially from the United States under 20 team. And that's like it's a little bit of a lofty goal. But yeah, this guy, Brady Scott, he was the starting keeper and won the Gold Glove honors when they won the CONCACAF tournament. That's a really big deal.
Yeah, it was good to hear that we're, you know, not only getting someone good, but also, you know, adding depth into this position, which is something that was a little questionable. But we got a little more depth. He seems to be have a good, some good achievements. I don't know much about him. I sent you a video. I'm like, oh, okay, here's a little highlight video, but I don't think it was the right guy.
It's not a very known quantity to us as guys that are just entering USL coverage, but just on your gut, I want to know, do you think this is purely a depth move, or do you think that he could replace Diaz as a starter?
That's tough. I would say that with the way that, you know, Diaz is performing, you don't switch it. He's a guy on loan. There's no, you know, real need for growth there, or like priority for growth there. I think it's just a depth move. I wouldn't be surprised if maybe if he gets a little tweak, he plays him. If Diaz gets a little tweak, you know, he'll play him. But no, I think Diaz is going to be there for the season until Grinwis might be back.
Yeah, that's my gut as well. Just as far as, you know, basically the only other goalkeeper on the squad, Diego, I believe, I'll double check here. It's Ramos. He is another academy guy. So the only other keeper on the squad is in the academy, and he's in that, he's frankly kind of in that kids table group. Like he's one of those guys that looks like a kid. Yeah, Diego Ramos. He is not quite 18 yet. I think he's got a lot of promise, but he just looks kind of, he just has that kind of vibe where it's like, okay, well, he's just not ready yet. So I think that's probably why Brady was brought in to be that depth. Brady is now 21, definitely has that sort of, you know, fully grown player appearance to him, has obviously been in some higher pressure situations. But I also will note that our friends over at 916 Republic podcast, those guys don't think it's this. They don't think it's just depth. They think that he would not be brought over to the Republic unless he was going to given a serious chance to start and probably get multiple starts, if not take over the position entirely. That's, they just feel about where Brady is in his career, where he's looking for more recognition to potentially get more looks at the national level in his age group, that he would only agree to this if he was going to be getting time.
Yeah, that's a perspective I was lacking for sure, was, you know, his perspective as a key player for the, you know, youth national team. And that's definitely a possibility. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. Good point.
Yeah, I think those guys over there are super tuned into the USL. I don't know. I really have no idea. But yeah, let's move on from that to the back line in this one, because there was a change here as well. Two changes, actually. And we can get into both. You can pick who we want to get into first, but McCrary started out on the right side, Sargis in the middle, both of those same as usual. But we got the return, the Gomez subbed in the last game, but Shannon Gomez started on the left. And Matt Mahoney took over Tomas Hilliard-Arce's role in a center back position. And I'll also just note here that Hilliard-Arce wasn't in the 18, wasn't on the injury report, just not in this game, not available in this game for whatever reason.
Yeah, I'm not quite sure what was going on there as far as being completely left out. But I was shocked to see this lineup initially, just based off of, like, it was basically most of the subs we saw towards the end of the game, most of the bigger name subs that we saw towards the end of the game against Portland last game, but starting. With Mahoney and, you know, people moving up, Gomez coming in, it was interesting. I was just excited to see Gomez for as a starter. I don't know about you.
So I'm very happy for Shane Gomez to make his return as a starter. He did a full hour-long podcast on The Breakaway with Connor Sutton. I recommend anyone go check that out to hear his story of working back from injury. I think he looked, you know, a little bit slow here and there, but that's how it's always going to be in your first game back, first 90 minutes back from injury. I think he can be a very valuable piece to the team going forward. And, you know, perhaps in particular when you consider it allowed Ash Apollon to move up into the attack. What did you think about Ash in this game?
I thought that Ash moving up, I think I mentioned a few episodes ago that, like, when Shannon comes back, that could be a real possibility. And it seems to have happened, at least experimentally. I thought he looked, you know, he looked okay. One thing it does tactically is I think it locks down that side a little more. You know, you have Apollon who's been playing as a defender, then you have a defender behind him. So I think it locks down the side a little better. I think Ashu's still a moment-by-moment guy. I think he'll have these cool moments that will could open up, you know, the attack. But I also think he'll give you a weird pass every once in a while, and you don't know what you're going to get from him from moment to moment. But it's, you know, hopefully if he stays in this position a little more, that he can improve on it. And then again, with him moving into the midfield, that makes more midfield depth as well. So overall, it's good to the good for the team to have Shannon back, because it allows players to move around and add depth in other places.
Yeah, so we've mentioned before that we like Sam Werner as a, you know, not as a defender, but his defense from an offensive attacking midfielder, winger position. He's able to give you a little bit of defense from that spot in the field. And I think that was a pretty decent balance from him and Ash. Like, they're playing the wings essentially, but they're also relatively stout in defense when they want to be. But I'm a little bit concerned, because I don't know that this team like needs more defense. I think that I think it's becoming an issue that they're not scoring goals, unless it's the kids subbing in. I think that they could probably really use more chemistry and perhaps more firepower and perhaps even like another signing, quite honestly, in attack. But what did you think about Werner as well?
He always looks like he's the best dude in the attack, even in this game, even in off games. I agree with what you're saying as far as like we have like defensive wings that are forward wings. I see what you're saying. That could help lead the press. I don't know how Ash would do like really like pushing like that against defenders. I'd like to see it again for sure. And I think you're right about having another like signing would help, but I don't think, or not another signing, but just another guy in there. I don't know if that would really make any differences. We're already having like what seems like we're agreeing is possibly a chemistry issue. Does adding another guy to that help?
Yeah, I mean, you could totally be right about that, but my thought would be it's you got to change something when things aren't working. Like, it's kind of the opposite of if it's not broke, don't fix it. Like, something's broken, so you got to try to fix something. I'm not sure like just sitting around and continuing to kind of rotate, you know, Belmar and Bijev and Formella in and out of these spots is really going to get it done. I don't know. Maybe I'm wrong about that. I certainly could be. I don't know. It's not really working for me. Like, Werner, you said he's like the best attacking player in the game. I don't think I agreed on this one. Really? And I'm not sure I agree going back a little bit here, going back several games. He is very aggressive, which is great, but I don't know that he's like really, and he had that one chance that he cut inside and, you know, just missed goal by a little bit, maybe a couple feet, maybe a yard or two at most, but, and that was a nice chance, but he also had 9 unsuccessful crosses in this one. I just think he like doesn't really link up that great, and maybe that you could put that on the guys that are finishing on those, like Iwasa and Formella. Maybe they're not really coming to the ball. Maybe they're not doing the best when they get the ball. But it didn't feel like he created as much. He's not getting results. And he hasn't been starting recently until this game. So, I don't know. I would have liked to see something a little different there. I could easily see Belmar coming back on for him. Belmar did not see the field at all in this one. Was that a surprise to you at all?
not too much of a surprise. I don't know. It seems like Briggs was trying to – it has been trying to play the kids a little more. They've been – it's been less surprising that they're coming onto the field. So, no, not too surprising that they were the ones that were kind of tapped to go in. It would have been cool to see them. Have you noticed that it seems like Briggs isn't even flirting with using all five subs anymore?
Yeah, I think he's trying to settle down into what he wants. But then again, he made a bunch of changes. It's surprising to me that the Chavez and the Pinago subs, obviously those won the game for him. But I'm not even sure like that was really the thought. I think the thought could have been give these guys experience. If they win, great. You know, if they get us 3 points, great. But I'm not sure that that was the thought as much as the experience.
Yeah. Yeah, I can see that.
I got one thing I just want to throw out there on Belmar before we move on.
Yeah.
Really troubling stat I just want to throw out there. Can you guess how many shots on target he has this season?
On target, 2.
0. Zero. He has taken 5 shots, 0 of them on target. Just like for comparison's sake, Pinagos and Chavez combined have 3 shots. All 3 are on target, 2 goals. So, I mean, Belmar, like, this goes back to what we were saying at the beginning.
Them combined?
Yeah.
Okay.
This goes back to what I was saying at the very beginning. Like, Belmar is a better player than them. Like, he's a better player than them, but it's just execution, right?
Yeah. That's – what – I more or less want to know if you think there's a weak link in this attack.
Okay. Who is the weakest link on the attack?
Yeah.
Gosh.
We can edit this out if you want.
No, that's okay. My answer is going to be terrible, and it's going to sound so stupid and ridiculous because it's the guy who's leading the team in goals. But it's Formella.
Yeah. I think there's a body language issue going on here, Rich.
Oh, is it Bijev?
I'm
sorry. Yeah, no, you're absolutely right. I don't know. I don't even have him. He's not on the list I'm looking at because he didn't start in this game. But no, get into this, man. Okay. So this actually is a great transition to something that I tweeted about and something that I think is a real problem.
I want him to be so good.
You know what the problem is? It's the 10 on this team. They don't have one. It's like, it's not Bijev and it's not Formella. Formella playing there doesn't work. It didn't work tonight. It hasn't worked in the past. He's a pretty good finisher. Like, he's played well on the wing. He's played well as a striker. I don't think that he really works at the 10, to be honest with you. And Bijev isn't working either. Neither of them, like, work in that spot. I think, like, our concern isn't even with these players individually. It's more like they're not good in this spot, and I think this team is just missing a 10 in general.
That's a really good point. As you were saying that, I'm thinking, well, we kind of don't, like, have a 10, like, which is what you're saying, but I mean, like, we don't use one really, because we seem to, especially this game, like, kind of let the 10 go up. And
yes,
but that may speak to us, like, to your point, like, not having one. Maybe they're going up because they're actually strikers and that's where they want to be. Maybe it's not that Briggs doesn't want to play with one. It's that he's trying and he doesn't have one.
And Briggs has put Iwasa in that 10 spot, and he's not a 10. Like, I think the team either doesn't have one, or are you ready for my solution to this problem?
Yes.
You play Roro at the 10. And you behind him, you put Skundrich and Villarreal. They're kind of your holding central defense-ish midfielders. And Willer Aminu, when he's healthy, can rotate into that group as well.
We've seen that.
We have seen that, and it worked a lot better, and the team was scoring back then. And so Roro, just you stick him at the top of the midfield triangle there. He plays balls to whether it's Ash, whether it's Werner, whether it's Belmar, whether it's Bijev on the wing, whether it's Formella on the wing, or Cam up top. He's directing those attacking looks. And it's kind of tough because it takes away from the long ball, which is a specialty of his. He doesn't really need to make long passes if he's at the 10. But we also kind of need someone to make sharp, short passes and actually like break that line of defense. I think he's the man for it.
I don't hate it, Rich. I don't hate it. That's a good point, man. I think we looked better back then. Wow, good point. And then what? We try to get one in for next season?
Yeah, probably. That's probably the place you need to upgrade. Are you satisfied with Iwasa as a striker?
Man, we are when he scores, aren't we?
Right. Like, I mean, we are.
That's what sucks is like, no, I'm not. Cause I think if that's how I'm feeling, like if we're only happy with a player when they're scoring, then they're not doing good when we're not, when, you know, we're, I think there's players on teams, especially the good players, that you're like, hey, the team didn't do good, but that guy still looked good.
Right. I mean, 10 appearances, 7 shots on goal. It's probably not what you want from your striker. And we've been giving him the benefit of the doubt for the history of it all. It's great that he had a 50th career goal. You know, that's nice. That's a nice story. But again, I want to tip my hat to the 916 Republic podcast guys. They're very smart over there, and they have a better grasp of the history from covering the team for much longer. And I think they're kind of at the end of their rope with him. They think that, like, yeah, he's bought himself time, but I think they want a replacement sooner than later.
I think the off the ball stuff from him is good, but he's a striker. He's supposed to be scoring goals. So,
right.
Yeah. And you know, we've spoke about it is the clinical finishing from everyone in this front line, including Cam. It's just not there.
So many shots off target, like the shots off target.
That's important.
Are insane. It's insane. Yeah. Like Iwasa, yeah. So he's shot 19. He's had 19 shots, 12 off target. Sam Werner, 15 shots, 10 off target. Bijev, 12 shots, 7 off target. You know, even Roro, 11 shots, 7 of those off target. I mean, put some shots on goal, fellas. And like, if you hang around practice or you hang around the games that are being played live, you know, you're going to hear Briggs just really giving it to his team about this specific thing. He is very upset with the finishing. So I don't think it's just us. It's not just the podcasts out there that are talking about this team. I think the coach is fed up with the finishing. It's, I mean, the execution has to change. It's just tough when I know small sample size for example, Julian Chavez, who came in one shot on target, one goal. And you can't ask to like replicate anything near that, but it's just tough when like the kids haven't put a shot off target all year. Like, but the pros are like 75% of their damn shots are off target.
That's funny. That's funny. What are we thinking towards the future as far as games? We did some predictions for this game last week, And actually, if you combined our scores, we were correct in our own way, but also wrong in the other. Do you want to do some predictions for the next game?
Yeah, let's wrap it up here. Just like looking ahead, they got that Orange County SC game that was rescheduled. That's coming up this upcoming Wednesday, the 9th. And then a rematch at home against Reno. That one's at home. Three straight at home, facing Tacoma on the 19th as well. Man, and this season is going to be ending pretty quickly. Only three games past that. But for those three, I'm going to go ahead and call. I know I've been calling for some losses and I've been wrong. I'm going to go ahead and call a loss against Orange County SC, or at least a draw, because those guys just, they don't give up a lot of goals. And I don't know how long the luck can hold up against Reno. Like, Reno's a good team, man. I don't know how we're goosing them for 3 points every time we see them. Like, I feel like this could be 1 point in the next two games. I don't know. What about you?
I think we're due to drop points with this last performance. I think we're going to drop points against Orange County. It's a hairline margins with Reno and us. They definitely, I hate to say like they deserve one, but it seems we got PKs that separate us, really. I'll be happy if we can leave with 3 points out of both these games. If we can get a win out of one of these games, I'll be happy.
Yeah, I'd say 4 points would be an undeniable success out of these next two. And three is pretty good as well. And like even two honestly isn't terrible, considering that these are good teams. Reno at the top of the group and Orange County SC second in their group with a goal in hand to a very, very good Phoenix Rising FC. These are two good clubs. And they're public have won 5 straight. And yes, they've been good. They have been good, but I don't think that they've been great. And I think we're, you know, quite frankly, kind of getting smacked around in a game wouldn't be the worst thing for this team. I think just in terms of energy and chemistry and engagement, I think that sometimes you got to take a step back to take 2 steps forward. So I honestly wouldn't be worried if they lost a game. I would just be excited for the potential for the team to regroup and get better going forward, because it's kind of tough with these like consecutive games against the Portland Timbers, who don't have a single point in the season. It's just, I worry that it can like make you a little bit too sure of yourself.
Yeah. I can get on board with that. You're definitely one of those guys that you almost think that taking a couple L's will boost up a good team that's on the decline. And
like the great Mike Tyson says, everyone has a plan until they get punched in the face. So I don't want this team to get punched in the face for the first time in the playoffs.
I couldn't say it better myself. I think we definitely have some playoff talk here in the next coming games, after the next coming games to get into, but we're not quite there yet. So on that note, I have nothing further to say.
That'll do it, brother. Thanks everyone for listening. This is there's a lot of late night vibes on this one. We're recording around midnight. we're a little bit sleepy, some sleepy time tea, some chamomile up in this episode. But if you enjoyed it, please subscribe, rate, and review. Hit us up on Twitter and whatever else you want to do. Just thanks for listening, everybody.
Good night.